right today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us. If there is one thing that Nnamdi Comer seems to be, it is busy. The Detroit native is a poet and someone who is super active in an awful lot of community writing and artistic scenes. She's worked with various organizations, including the really wonderful Inside Out Literary Arts Projects. She has served as a curriculum developer and youth curriculum consultant for a lot of arts organizations. And she has a writer in residence in Detroit's public schools. And she now currently works as the director of the Allied Media Project Speakers Bureau and as the co-director of Detroit Lit, a program that provides reading and professional development opportunities to narrative makers of color here in Detroit. But that is not all she is going to be doing, because recently Nnamdi Comer was named to be the first poet laureate in the state of Michigan since the 1950s. I'm really pleased to have Nnamdi here in the studio with us to discuss what drives her work, how Detroit influences her art, and what she makes of Michigan having a poet laureate once again. Nnamdi Comer, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here, and congratulations.
Thank you.
On being named the poet laureate for the state of Michigan. I wanted to hear how you reacted when you learned that that you would be our next poet laureate, and that you'd be the first one since the 1950s.
I've known a little bit longer than the rest of the state, and when they called and sent me emails, I was just very much floored, because when I was named as a finalist, I thought, oh, there's no way that I'll get this. This is more like a lifetime achievement kind of acknowledgement. And then when they told me that they were really interested in having me fulfill the position, it really, really was an honor. It shocked, floored me. And then when every time anyone says it, like Nnamdi Comer, the Michigan Poet Laureate, I still feel something in my stomach like, oh, wow, that's me.
Right.
So, yeah.
So when they called you, did they explain what the expectation might be for this role? I mean, given that we haven't had one since mm-hmm. the 1950s, I guess I'm kind of curious about what the aim is here.
Well, one of the things that I think folks should know is that the position is spearheaded by the Michigan Department of Education, mm-hmm. the Governor's Office, and the Library of Michigan. So there's a very big focus on thinking about the youth and thinking about education and how young writers will be influenced and shaped through this work. And so we actually worked collaboratively to design what the position looks like, because no one has done this before. It's been 60
right.
years.
We can't even talk to somebody
well, you know,
would remember what we did.
I've been, you know, talking to laureates around the country, and we talked to some people that have been on selection committees and discussed like what that actually looks like in other states. But we really wanted to think about what Michigan needed, what did Michigan youth need. And so a lot of the position, the formal kind of position, because there's just so much that I want to do outside of what the state has asked me to do. But a lot of the formal responsibilities will be to visit schools and libraries all over the state, both in the upper and lower peninsula. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's really exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the work that you do now, I think is best described as trying to bring poetry to as many people as possible, mm-hmm. to get people interested in it, to get people interested in doing it. It seems like being the poet laureate is kind of a natural extension then, mm-hmm. really, of that work, and puts it on a much bigger platform, the entire state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people ask, how do I even get my own poems done? But I really think that because I had really strong mentors and really strong supporters of my own work, I feel constantly like there has to be a way to support more writers coming down this path, or to kind of give a more more clarity to how writers get shaped, especially in Michigan. I think that oftentimes we don't in Detroit in particular, we just don't know how do we go from writing in our notebooks to getting a book. And so a lot of the time, I really do love like pulling aside young and older writers and saying, these are some of the ways that you can get involved. This is how you do it on a local level. This is how you do it on a national level. And if you want an international opportunity. So, you know, this doesn't really feel outside of the scope of the kind of work that I've been doing for a really long time.
Yeah. So tell me about what led you to this work. I've known you and known your work for a bit, and I want to hear the story about how you become a poet.
There's so many stages. I don't think it happened overnight for me. I like to tell everyone that, you know, now I'm an avid reader, but when I was young, it was actually really quite hard because I was a slow reader, and I don't think I had a problem with comprehension. I just really sat down with words, and I just really was slow to take them in. So that meant that I was in the slow reading group, and I didn't really think I could be, you know, that kind of fast-paced reader and writer. Mm. And then once I got to high school, I had a teacher, Terry Blackhawk, who later became the founder of Inside Out Literary Arts Project that, yes, a lot of people know.
Yes.
She started what was kind of the prototype of bringing writers and introducing her students to professional writers. And I remember meeting people like Peter Marcus and Leslie Reese, who are from the Detroit area, and just really understanding, oh, this is what I actually can do with my time. But then I had later, another mentor through, there used to be a thing called the Summer Youth Employment Program, and they had the Summer Arts Program, mm-hmm, where they actually hired young artists to produce theatrical performances. And I enrolled in the Writers Program, and I studied for the first time under Vivie Francis. And she took what I was doing in school, where I was like, I think this is a poem. And she was like, but is this the poem that you want to write? Is this what you actually feel or do? And she shifted. And along with other influences in the 90s, like the open mic scene, seeing Jessica Kerr Moore, being friends with people like Joe Fluent Green.
Yes.
And that all just really shaped kind of like my foundation for writing. And there's been so many more experiences since then, but those are like really those key moments in my high school years were what really started me into poetry.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you describe yourself as being a slow reader. I was the same way. And in some ways I still am. I labor over the words and the sentences and the structure and the meaning, and sometimes read a sentence two or three times before I go on to the next one. And it's, you know, it's so unfortunate, I think, that sometimes people take that as being about ability or, mm-hmm, interest, right? You're not someone who's just burning through, mm-hmm, novels or even nonfiction works. I mean, you're somebody who's taking your time. And I think that's such a critical part of being someone who creates words and stories, mm-hmm, and narrative is that time and taking it for yourself and not feeling guilty about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think also something about being a part of a community can really foster your work, right? So I spoke about those two teachers, but then when I think back on the writers that were around me and the writers that my parents always had, they had a bookshelf. And I remember just like kind of robbing their bookshelf and taking all their books with me to college. But I remember like the year that I got a Kresge, I also got it. The eminent artist was Gloria House.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt so natural because she had been in my life since I was a child doing the work that she was doing. And so it feels like Detroit does that. Like we just have writers all around. We're really strong poetry city. And so I think that people in Detroit sometimes don't know just how amazing it is,
yeah,
to just be around writers all the time.
Yeah. And you gave a shout out to Terry Blackhawk and Inside Out. And I want to hit that again. I mean, the tremendous community that has grown up around that organization, the number of young people who at this point have come through that and been, mm-hmm, part of it and now make up the poetry or the other kinds of art scenes here in Detroit. It's just mind blowing. I mentioned them last week when I had Tyama Jess on the program because he's a big fan, and now you're here, and you're really a product of.
Oh yeah, I'm an alumna.
Yeah.
I definitely and I go back often. I'll be with them next month visiting some of their schools for their publication parties and things like that. I can't wait, and that was set up before the laureate announcement. But it's just because I really do enjoy. Meeting young people right when they're at a moment of feeling like they need to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that poetry is a really incredible tool. I don't set out to make professional poets. What I set out to do is to make sure that a student knows that they have tools at their access to express themselves. And I'm not going to reach everyone. Some of them are going to find music as the way to do that, and some will find science. But it's really amazing when you find someone who didn't think that poetry could be that outlet for them, and then you show them something that they didn't know could be a poem, and they're like, oh, I see myself in that, and I want to tell my story too.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing yourself in something, it's such a key part of becoming that kind of creator or artist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this really wonderful conversation with Nandi Comer, who is Michigan's first poet laureate in many decades. We'll also want to start getting you involved in the conversation. Do you enjoy poetry? How has that art form impacted you in your life? Alternatively, maybe you don't love poetry. What would get you more interested in it? What would you like to see Michigan's poet laureate do to get more people interested in and involved in poetry? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Today, I'm 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined. I'm sitting here with Nandi Comer, who is the new Michigan Poet Laureate, also author of American Family Syndrome, as well as Tapping Out. We're talking about poetry. We're talking about Poet Laureate, that role has not been filled here in the state of Michigan since the 1950s, and what Nandi will do in that role. Would love to hear from you as well. What do you make of poetry, and how does it play a role, I guess, in your life? Give us a call and let us know. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. And we can include you in the program that way. Nandi, I do want to have you read for us. But I first want to talk about the role that music plays in your work. When Tyamba Jess was here last week, I talked about, for me, that being one of the most exciting parts of poetry, the way that other artistic influences kind of overlap so mm-hmm. often, rhythm and pacing, all of those things, as writers, we borrow from other art forms. And I think poetry does that in really a magical way. But I want to hear you talk about why music is such an important part of your work.
I know at one point, sometimes when I'm revising my work, I revise for a lot of different things, punctuation, clarity, but sometimes I just want to see if it sings.
Mm. Literally.
Literally, like the muscle music of the language. I really want to see if I can press into the language so that someone who is reading it can take it, read it out loud, and really get a sense for the original sound that I was thinking of when I was writing the work. I mean, poetry we think of it now as being like kind of a stuffy art form that is tucked away in books, but it has always been an oratory kind of spoken art form from like wherever you want to draw from. You can draw from the ancient Arab influence of like the huzzle. You can look to griots that use the drum as a way of keeping time, the lyre. You can just all over the world. The poet and the musician has always been tied. And I even think about today's hip hop artists, mm-hmm. you know, it's very like natural to think of the rhythm of the work. Now there are some poets who have other concentrations, but for my own work, I am thinking about lyric and how it is giving depth within sound and meaning in the work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always say that I learned as much about writing, and I'm not a poet, I'm a journalist, but I learned as much about writing from music and musicians, especially when I was a teenager, as I did from other writers. The kind of pacing and phrasing of a Miles Davis, for instance, mm-hmm. has a real connection to the way that I pace and phrase words on a page, or Paul Simon. I mean, a really broad range of music was really the foundation for me, and I think that's pretty common mm-hmm. among writers.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely. Someone asked me about the influences on my writing when I was writing my first full length collection. And yeah, I spoke to poets, but I was also speaking to like the poems that have a lot to do with my time in Mexico. So Mexican corridos, but like my poems have always been influenced by music. I remember in like the 90s in high school being like headphones on, sitting in front of my boombox, listening to The Score by the Fugees on repeat, just trying to figure out how I was going to really reconcile this problem I had in a poem. So yeah, I definitely have moments where I just like, sometimes I'm just listening to one song on repeat while I'm writing a poem. And sometimes it's in silence, but it is important to me, the music of the poem.
Yeah, yeah. What would you like to read for us, Nandi?
I'm going to read a fairly new poem. It's not actually published anywhere yet. Yes. I've read it in public before, but I've been thinking a lot about stories and Detroit stories. And so one time I was brought into a TV writer's room who they were writing a show about Detroit that never actually came to the light of day. But one of the executives asked that the last question was, what do you feel like people get wrong when they try to tell stories about Detroit? So that's the title of the poem.
Yeah.
What do you feel like people get wrong when they try to tell stories about Detroit? Everything. The calligraphy of a burned rubber joyride scrolled and spinning at every street corner, driving out of the way to get to your familiar corner store. The murals memorializing our loss, or the towering face of a woman rocking an old English D as big as your face. Everything. You've forgotten 6 a.m. tamales in Southwest, Westside bare knuckle fight clubs. If you aren't careful, you will miss the bedazzled cluster of Red Hat Club ladies gathered for Third Sunday brunch. Or you might miss the buzz of a rainbow casino beckoning young, thirsty beggars. Outside, never say river. And you are an outsider. Say it. If you only see the motor, you might forget gators and Coney Islands. Every sag and our old porch is from the weight of a good grill or a nighttime rib cookout. There is a street where a man has spilled shoes around a collection of vacuums. He lives in a polka-dotted house. We call it home. Careful not to forget our affinity for the elaborate and bright. Our weekend outfits are laced in gold-gilded shine. Everything you are thinking is not enough. Every shrub, every face, every burnout building is not a conjuring to be storied. We are a slighted bunch, a forgotten myth. Come, sit in our open-faced burger of a city. Find the fantasy between our children's teeth and a summer torrential storm. Where is your story? Take a seat. Listen.
Wow. Wow. I love that line. If you only see the motor, you might forget. Gators in Coney Island. It's such wonderful imagery. The imagery throughout that poem, in fact, is just it's so vivid. It's like you're painting, not writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot about the national narrative of Detroit and then how many individual stories are lost in the national narrative. And so I've been writing a lot, trying to write to those details that we all know
mm-hmm.
in our city.
That we live.
Yeah, we live them. And so, yeah.
Is this part of another book coming?
Maybe? I don't want to speak that out just yet. There are some other projects that I'm working on too. So this may show up somewhere, but I'm not sure. Also don't know that I'm completely done with it yet. I just wanted to share something that...
Revision, right?
Yeah.
That's an important part of the process mm-hmm. too. And I think not an acknowledged part of the process often
yeah.
enough, right?
Revision is, I would say, 95% of the writing. If you have not thought to revise, then you're not done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes they come easy, but sometimes, a lot of times they come with work.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here. Let's go to Janice in Detroit. Janice, welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning to everyone. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I know that a lot of your conversation, Ms. Comer, has been focused on youth, and that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But I'm 73, and I really, really enjoyed having Inside Out. Susanna Honda came to Hannon House.
Wow.
And she reawakened something I thought was long gone in my life, and that's my love of writing poetry. I did when I was younger, and I remember sending in a poem to a magazine. I didn't even have it on a typewritten paper. I just hand wrote it and sent it in. I know it went in somebody's file 13, but Susanna through Inside Out gave us an opportunity to really have our poems. She really inspired us so much, and many of us were writers already and had quite a grand collection. So just because we're older doesn't mean that we're run out of juice. It gives us wonderful opportunity to recall, revisit, and speak our lives again.
Yeah. Janice, what a wonderful thought. And I'm so glad you called and shared that. Poetry is for everyone. No question about that. Nandi, we're going to run out of time, but I know you want to talk a little about the idea of a Detroit poet laureate. We don't have one. Do you think we should?
Well, I just want to, I think that it's, we've gone 60 years without a Michigan poet laureate. And I really would be really sad if Detroit went 60 years without a poet laureate. I grew up benefiting from the projects and from like the contest that Naomi Long Magid, spearheaded, and I've read a lot of the work that she helped to usher into the world through her press, and I really think that
she was the city's poet laureate.
Yes, she was the city's poet laureate, and unfortunately, we lost her. She passed away recently, and the city has a vacancy, and I really am looking forward to not only seeing the city choose the poet laureate, but I'm looking forward to working with that person when they are appointed. So I would say, please, let's get it going.
Let's get
going on that.
Yeah. All right. Nandi Comer, it's always great to see you and really great to have you as Michigan's poet laureate now. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, that's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow and we'll have more great programming for you here on Detroit Today. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station. Your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.